Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well, do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
I should have been, an honest answer would be a mistake.
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
You're welcome along to the football show. So Kevin Caban is still here, obviously, and unexpectedly. I mean, when I woke up this morning, if you had said to me Jason McAteer would be in studio with us, I would have said, how would all this have come about? But unexpectedly and wonderfully, you're here.
I am, Joe, yeah. Joe, I'm a little bit disappointed with you, Joe. Me and you have done a lot of work together in the past.
Yeah.
And then you just, like, binned me, didn't you? Like, lost lover.
And he was digging you out on air earlier on as well.
Like a lost lover, Kev. You know one of them? He's like, mate for ages. And then he doesn't hear, and then he all of a sudden he stops texting, stops ringing.
Yeah.
Do you know, he's one of them. That's not strictly true, because we were big fans of Jason on this show.
Yeah.
Regularly worked together, 2012. Loved having him on. Some road shows as well, where you brought the house down.
This is what I'm saying,
and
Joe.
Then, I was at a road show with Jason once, yeah.
Yeah. And then McAteer hit the big time in Qatar.
Well, he took the big...
Do you know what I'm saying?
He took the money.
I hit the big time with...
He disappeared.
I hit the big time with a guitar. That's not in Qatar. No, you're right.
But you can imagine me this morning.
I moved on to bigger things.
I was in the airport queue this morning. I was in the airport queue with Fionn. The two of us are in the queue, and I get a text from Jason.
That's Fionn Davenport, by the way.
Fionn Davenport, yeah.
Talk, part of the Golf Weekly podcast.
Yeah, so Fionn and I are in the queue, and they get a text from Jason. Stop admiring the girl that's in the queue ahead of you. So he's... and I'm looking around, where is he? Where is this? But anyway, can't spot him at all. Anyway, he gives me some stick. He said, get your eyes away from that girl, will you? So anyway, so that was...
eyes everywhere.
Yeah.
Eyes everywhere.
And you can't take him anywhere.
So yeah, that was it.
What has you over in Dublin today?
I've been at a business conference.
Oh yeah,
at the Aviva, 3,000 people. I was with John Muldoon, Connaught, who is
from where?
Connaught.
Yeah, bit better.
He's sporting a black eye right now,
is he,
but it looks the part because he's a rugby player. Don't
sure,
he? They look brilliant rugby players when they like got a black eye and that. Don't they? Mm. They look rock hard. And Luke Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Who, top fellas, like great stories.
Right.
And we were just, that's what we were doing. We were just telling a few stories.
Did you have a few good stories?
The usual come up, Kev. You know all my stories now. That's why John's been me, because he's heard all my stories. But, yeah, I had a really good time with them. And then, because they wanted to get off really early, I was released from my duties. And I knew Kev was in town, so I rang him, said, do you fancy a pint? He said, I'm working till 10. He said, do you fancy coming on? I said, would that Joe Malloy? And he went, yeah. I went, no. But he convinced me by buying me a kebab.
Good. So I mentioned Qatar. You're spending a lot of time out there now and doing really well. And you're not just, like, it's not just punditry. You're presenting the football coverage.
Yeah.
Well.
I've been doing it for 6 years now, Joe. Going over and doing BeIN Sports. Obviously, doing the Premier League is with Richie Keys and Andy Gray. And, you know, for all their faults and what people think, you know, they are, for me, they are two of the best broadcasters there are. So I'm learning from the best, to be honest.
And is Richard Keys helpful?
Unbelievably.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I have some Keys tips? Or what kind of, like, how, would he take you through tapes yourself, or would he give you just general advice?
No. I think just working with him, you realise how he questions, his line of questioning. He doesn't ask the obvious. He wants to know. He's got a great way of getting behind the scenes stories out of you, because he knows we're privy to a few things that, you know, we shouldn't be really. And he's got a great knack of getting them stories out of you. And he wants to know. You can't research for a Richie Keys show. You can do, like, he's not interested in stats. Mm. Doesn't want to know how many times Liverpool have given the ball away this season or how many corners. He wants to know if the owners are going to sell the club, and if they are, why, and who's interested. And
we probably have become too stats-driven, haven't we? The odd stat here and there, yes, but far too much now. There's far too many pieces, I think, being written solely around stats. It's almost as if people actually don't like football, but they're actually solely interested in what that stat actually means and how many stats they can get out of that stat, if you know what I mean.
Because
you're going to get 10 stats around one. Mm. And it's just...
Yeah.
Like, do you actually like the game?
Yeah.
Do you actually watch the game? That's what it seems to
me. You sometimes think it's a shield for people who don't really know what they're watching.
Yeah. It is the honest truth.
Did you ever read Richard Keys's blog?
Yeah.
I don't want to put you in a difficult position here, right? Because I appreciate he's a mate of yours. But I read the blog and it strikes me as someone who's just... still just very wrapped up in his exit from the game and would just misses being the centre of English culture. Like, I suspect he's probably been watched by more viewers on BeIn, but I think he really misses the fact that he's not on English TV now. That's my sense watching him.
My take on Richard and what happened is he's still very hurt by what happened. You know, he knows how the industry works. He knows the things that get said. He knows, you know, what you can and can't say. And I think he feels that he let his guard down and he was punished severely for it. And yeah, I think he has got a little bit of resentment towards certain people who were around that time and that moment, and he feels let down by them. Mm. He felt he could have been protected a little bit more. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, what we watch now on a Saturday, or certainly a Sunday and Monday Night Football, he was a pioneer with that, with Andy Gray.
Yeah,
they that was their idea. They come up with that, and it's a great concept. And, you know, the way we watch football tonight is largely down to what Richard Keys thought with Vic Wakelin at Sky and Andy Gray, and they come up with this idea. And the model's there for everyone to copy, really. And I think he feels let down by the way it was all handled and the way he was portrayed by the media and stuff. So
what is your standard afternoon in Qatar if you're doing a bit of work then, if you're
golf.
Presenting? Oh, really?
Well,
that's a good...
we're 3 hours ahead of times, aren't we? So okay. I get the daylight. So it's golf and then...
the word is you football boys have a...
Although, as my missus is listening...
Great time out there.
I'm researching. Research. we over in BN, they've got everything, so we can do anything from a Bundesliga game to a Serie A.
What predominantly would you be covering yourself? What league would it be? Would it be predominantly English football, or would you be taking more coverage from elsewhere? Yourself personally, would you be taking in? I can imagine with Richard Keys, Andy Gray, they're doing the main Premier League games because that's the ones that you'd hear. And then what would you be doing around that?
I'd be in the studio with them.
Right.
So if I'm not. Because we've got the Saturday, Sunday, and they do Monday night themselves. So I would either do maybe a Saturday or a Sunday. But they do fly. They fly some big hitters in, to be fair. So sometimes I might have to take a back seat. But Saturday morning,
who can't you compete with then?
Hullet, Clivert, Souness, flip it.
Are you and Souness getting on well these days?
Best mates now, Joe. Honest to God.
No. Seriously.
He's like my best long lost uncle that I've kissed and made up with, and he just won't leave me alone.
It wasn't good there.
I actually love him. I love this Graeme Souness.
Right.
He's changed.
Has he changed?
Yeah.
So your sense of the Souness when you were a player?
Oh, I couldn't stand him.
Yeah.
You loved him as a kid as well, though, didn't you? He was one of your heroes as a kid.
Yeah,
wasn't he?
I was devastated when he did what he did to me. But
what did he do to you again? Was he in his towel and he sacked
basically,
you?
Yeah, the grandfather clock. Mate, they were dangling down. I swear to God, they were like space hoppers. They were massive. And it was just like a punchback, like one of them balls in Rocky, when he's just like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go at it. It was unbelievable. Legs up, dangling down, and I'm asking him for a move. How's that weird? Honestly, yeah, it was like a tea towel. It wasn't even a towel. You know, like a hand towel. He's like dried himself with a hand towel. That's how cool he was.
In his office.
In his office, yeah.
Right.
And, so basically it was like a miniskirt, wasn't it then? It was that short.
With his legs up on the desk, like this. Legs up on the desk. So like, he's there. And like, obviously, like now, you can see the lock, can't you? You can see the family jewels there, like a boxing... what's it called?
Speedball.
Speedball. Like a speedball, Kev, you're on it. And and he was dangling. He's got a little bit of, like, excess there. He was just dangling a bit.
So you went in looking for a move.
Yeah. And I had to give it the big one as well, because, like, I had to stand up to him.
Were you not getting on generally as player and manager?
No, we'd fell out, and he was doing let's upset him by, like, for instance, he took me to Birmingham away, and I mean, Kev probably won't tell you, you probably weren't subbed that many times, Kev, were you? But,
a few times.
Like, it was this situation where it was away game to Birmingham, I knew I wasn't going to start. You look at the squad, and I'm thinking, load of kids here, I'm going to get on the bench. Mm. Now, that means I'm going to get an appearance, which means I'm going to get a few quid. So I'm thinking, well, at least, you know, something's good going to come out of it.
Mm.
So he names the team, and I was that convinced, right, I've not even listened to the team. And then I started getting dressed, and Tony, like, I've took my tracky top off, and Tony Parker's come up to me, and he went, you're not in the 16. And I've gone, what? And I was the only one who never got stripped.
Right.
Thinking, ooh.
So that's a classic tactic.
Yeah. And so I've walked straight out and ordered a taxi from Birmingham, right? I've gone to the reception and gone, get me a taxi. She's gone, where are you going? I went, Liverpool. And I'm waiting for that taxi and I rang my agent. He went, it's the worst thing you can do.
Right.
He said, just rise above it. Anyway, I've got on the coach and after the game, and then I've got on the coach and then he's come back, Rezzy's tomorrow. He's looked at me and he's just gone, Rezzy's tomorrow. And he's just done things like that. He was horrible.
Okay.
And then I plucked up the courage to go and ask him for a move. Did it, went in the room, grandfather clock, asked him for a move, and he just went, I'll see what I can do. And then I got a phone call off the chief exec, John Williams. He was brilliant. I love John Williams. Of Blackburn, and he just said, yeah, you can, we've agreed a fee with, in fact, Kev instigated it. He rang me, said, do you want to come to Sunderland?
Right.
Yeah, Reedy was manager at the time as well, yeah. Reedy, so Quinny and me were on the case, I think.
Right, okay.
For Jason, that was it.
And the soonest that you encounter now, different person, or you're both just in different places?
Different places, John.
Is it too dramatic to say he's changed very much? Or
he has changed.
Mellowed?
He mellowed.
Yeah, but could you see, though, Jace, if he actually got a manager's job tomorrow, that Graeme Souness would return, I'm convinced of that.
He doesn't want a manager's job.
No, I know, but if he did, if he ever, you know, he had that long out of the game now, and I spoke to him about it myself, he comes in and does a bit with TV3, and you say to him, would you take a manager's job? No, but if he ever did get a job, or if he, say, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, if he took the job, even though he had mellowed as the years have gone by, you would still see that same Graeme Souness would come to the fore again.
So it's the pressures of the job.
Of course it is,
as
definitely.
As opposed to he's changed.
I mean, you've been involved in coaching management yourself, and you know that you probably react differently, different than you would in normal circumstances, because you just, I don't know, it's just maybe head goals, head losses, whatever it would be. I think you...
See, I got to disagree there, Kev, because he said to me, if he could get his time back, he'd never treat me that way. What he knows now,
right,
and how he's looked at life now and things that have happened and how he sees football and footballers, and he said, I wouldn't have treated you like that.
Right,
and I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry.
Oh, did he? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, Joe, it was unbelievable.
Did you bring it up with him? Or did it just come up casually, or did you think, I've unresolved issues here, I want to sit down and chat this through with him?
No, I'll tell you what happened. Mark Eatley said to me, God, I'm just dropping
He's
names.
Dropping names. Oh,
honestly.
Wow.
Yeah. Mark Eatley said to me, I'll meet you for dinner, 7:30. I said, okay, in Qatar. And I knew Graeme was around, and I said to him, it's just me and you, and he went, yeah. And I kind of would avoid him. Like, he'd be by the pool, and I'd go and, like, go by the beach. If he was by the beach, I'd go by the pool.
Right.
If he was in the gym, I'd like go back to my room. I'd just avoid him.
Right.
And Mark Eatley, I used to speak to Mark about it and stuff, because he was friends with Graeme. And he just went to me, listen, me and you dinner tonight, 7:30. I said, no problem, mate. Anyway, I goes down to the restaurant. I'm sitting in there. No sign of Mark Eatley, 7:40. No sign of him. Rings him. No, he doesn't pick his phone up. 7:45, Graeme Souness walks in. And he comes over to the table. He said, are you having dinner with Mark? He said, so am I. So next thing, he sat down. So
it's
Mark
like a blind
Haley,
date.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was, and we sat down and we started, you know, like that nicety, like, how are you? Like, how's the family and all that and stuff. And then I just thought, this is my opportunity. And I just went, Graeme, you know, I just want to say, I'm really disappointed the way you treated me. And, you know, and he went, yeah, and I am sorry for the way I treated you and I shouldn't have done. And, you know, and this, and that was it. We just literally just went bosh. And
that's great.
I forgive him. And not that he would think I need anything to... He didn't actually say, I am so sorry. He's not that kind of person.
Sure.
But he knew what he said to me, he knew he'd messed up.
He acknowledged he
was done wrong.
Yeah.
And we get on like house on fire now, and I meet him now and like...
Really?
Oh, mate, yeah, it's unbelievable. I swear to God.
Unbelievable?
Yeah, mate, it is. It is, yeah.
It's gone half-time at Stamford Bridge. Here's Nigel Bidmead with the first 45 minutes.
Chelsea 2, Middlesbrough 0. Diego Costa scored the opener on 23. Assist King Cesc Fabregas picked him out in the area. Costa had time to control and then nutmeg keeper Guzan. The second goal was similar. Azpilicueta with the pass this time. Marcus Alonso from a tight angle scored through the keeper's legs. Chelsea on their way to 3 points. Borough on the way to relegation. Chelsea 2, Middlesbrough 0.
There you go. Bouchard, by the way, took the first set against Sharapova 7-5, but Sharapova leading in the second 5-2, so that's going to go to a deciding set.
Isn't it funny sport how things like that? It's like when you leave, like I left Bolton and joined Liverpool, and our next game at Liverpool was Bolton.
Mm.
And like things like that.
Yeah. I left Everton. Exactly the same. Went to Wigan. First game, Everton at Goodison.
With Eugenie Bouchard and Sharapova.
Yeah.
I'm convinced they rigged the draw, though.
Do you?
I'm convinced they did. What would we be talking about the Madrid Open otherwise? Second round.
No.
I'm convinced this.
Do you think there's a way of doing it?
Oh, I'm sure.
Do you think Champions League's, there's something in it?
Well, the seeded now the draw, aren't they? So it's certainly the league's very different, isn't it? So maybe when they get to the, I don't know, when you get out last 16, last eight, whatever. I don't know. Can you imagine the ramifications if they ever found out that they were trying to fix draws and things like that?
They've fixed where World Cups are on, so I'm sure they fixed the odd game.
Mm. It's been around forever, that hot and cold balls, isn't it? Yeah. It's been around forever, hasn't it?
Here, less of the soonest talk. Right, we're...
well done, Joe.
Thank you. We're taking a short break. Jason McAteer is going to stick around and he texts into 53106.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So there's a text coming in for you, Jason McAteer. Kev, you can jump back in your spot. Somebody is wondering, how's Jason's golf since the new arrival? Has the nappy factor kicked in yet, Johnny and Navin?
I've got to be honest, I've never played so much golf since the new arrival. I've got the mother and father-in-law staying. My 2.5-year-old is in nursery, and my missus is breastfeeding, which is obviously something I can't do.
Yes.
So I get mornings free at the minute, so I'm straight out on the golf course, and my swing is looking very good at the minute.
Fantastic. So
I had a bit of trouble with my takeaway, Joe, but I've sorted it out.
What were you doing?
I was coming inside a little bit too much. But
classic mistake.
Yeah, I know.
Keep it back straight.
Do you play a golfer, Joe?
Yeah.
Very
good. Very good golfer.
Oh, I'm not very good. I'm off 13.
That's not bad.
I wouldn't be. I mean, you shouldn't take any advice from me, but the old inside takeaway, I've battled with that myself.
Yeah, and the elbow pointing to the ground and coming in. Yeah. It's going well at the minute, Joe.
The bottom line is.
Senior tour, I'm looking at.
Having a new child has really opened up your diary for golf, which is great.
Yeah, but it's not going to last forever, is it?
No, that's sure. So we've had a good run of your teammates in studio here for football shows randomly over the last while. We've had Niall Quinn in, who was telling some good stories, and we had Kenny Cunningham in. We've got to know Kenny a bit in the last couple of years, and we've only realised maybe he didn't like us at first, didn't trust us, wouldn't give us anything.
I got told off by Kendo once.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you were there, Kev, but I was writing a blog for the World Cup in 2002. And I wrote a story about Kenny, and he pulled me to one side and went, "Don't ever write about me ever again." And I thought he was messing. And I started laughing. He went, "I'm not messing." And like, he gives you that death stare, doesn't he? I thought, oh my God, he's been serious.
What did you say about him?
I don't know, something about his barnet or something. I don't know. I don't know. It was something funny. Well, I thought it was funny. Kenny obviously didn't. And you were a he lets you know where he stands, Kenny. He doesn't mess around.
He's kind of warmed up around us lately, and he started to tell us different stories. So he told us.
He's a great storyteller. He's funny, really funny, Kenny.
Who are you telling? So he's bringing the house down when he's in with us. And he just as he was leaving the last day, he was talking about, Ireland get-togethers. And, people didn't realise he was the designated driver.
He doesn't drink.
Yeah. So he was talking about that. Have a listen.
Talking about Gaz Kelly, I'll tell you a little story about him. I used to hoard out a car. Clearly, I didn't drive. So I was doing, let's get a car. Kenny will drive it. Shock. So I get a little, little Cinquento I used to get, cheap rate at the airport. We ended out in Malahide. Gibney's out in Malahide, wasn't it? Made the worst mistake. We had a few drinks. Let's get back to the hotel, lads. Come on, curfew off. We got another lads a few drinks. Oh, come on, we have another hour. Let's you come on, Kenny. No, lads. All right, let's go back to jump in the cab, lads. So I've got the car here. Gaz Kelly. I'll jump in the back. Like, a couple of us jump in the back. All right, Gaz. Jump in the back. Jumps into the back seat behind me. So start driving the coast road from Malahide out to Portmarnock.
Oh, yeah.
You know how dark that is? Yeah. That is literally the coast road, isn't it? That's the sea there on your left hand side. Yeah. So as I'm driving, suddenly my seat is reclining backwards. Gaz is reclining the seat, pinning me back and pulling me back slowly. My headrest came out, that got flung out the car window. So I'm almost in a vertical position, staring up the sunroof at the stars, driving about 30 miles an hour at one stage.
Not working your core, you're in your stronger core.
I'll be honest with you, I was sweating. You couldn't talk to Gaz. You know what Gaz is like? You couldn't talk to him.
Yeah.
Had to put the brakes on, throw him out of the car. It was ridiculous.
Did you literally throw him out of the car?
I possibly did physically throw him.
And was he doing hands over the eyes?
Oh, hands over the eyes. I was literally reclining the seat. I was literally going backwards, pulling the seatbelt, literally pinning me to it, pulling me back at the same time.
That was the wrong group to be designated driver with.
Bad group.
Yeah.
Bad
group. What a man.
I was in the car.
I'm sure.
Gary Kelly was putting his hands over his eyes as well. Kenny's eyes as well. It was just like, that was a regular occurrence that Sunday night.
They just sound like brilliant, brilliant days.
We did have
such fun.
I mean, we always used to say it as well, and we talk about it a lot, but we did actually used to come in that day early, so we'd always try and get in if we could, try and get that flight in on a Saturday, just so we could... Just so, I know it's for a night out, but it certainly was just to have that bit of extra time together on the squad. So instead of trying to get the day back at home, maybe coming on a Monday or a Tuesday before a weekend international, we would come in on the Saturday night, making sure that we're all in, and it was great times, it was. Yeah. And, of course, we went under the radar a little bit as well, which is quite good.
Yeah, I do a bit of talking with Robbie Fowler now. Another name I just dropped there. Yeah. And,
see how many more you can get in before the show finishes.
I'll get loads in. And he talks about playing for England a lot, and he used to say, we come back in on the Thursday morning and stuff, and he said we'd see the Irish lads, and he said they'd still have their hats on and the party poppers and all that, and he'd be like, we'd be like with England gutted that we weren't Irish. He said we must have had the best time ever. And I was like, oh Robbie, it was like a stag for 12 years. It's like being on a stag.
Did you realise straight away when you joined up with the team that this was going to be a great time? Like, are there stories that kind of jumped to mind, or times where you realised it was going to be such fun?
I was spoilt really, because I had a few years before Kev, so I had the older lads, and oh, Joe, it was like... Yeah, I mean, I was playing for Marine at 20 years old, and 3 years later, I'm playing for the Republic of Ireland in the World Cup with my heroes. But, like, big, big players, John Aldridge, Ronnie Whelan, Paul McGrath, Packy. And, I mean, we used to go to pitches on a Monday night, and it used to be the one in town where Rumours used to be, you know, next door to where Rumours was. And there was a little boozer on the corner. So we'd go in to the pitches, and then the lads would pick out what they want to watch and all that. And usually it was like everyone would go and see the same film. So we'd go in, and I remember Aldo saying to me, what time's it finish? And I go, like, 9:45. And he'd go, okay. Anyway, the curtain would come down, he'd go pitch black. And one by one, the older lads would just sneak off, but he'd make it look like they're going to the toilet. And then at 9:40, they used to come back in stinking of ale. So they'd just like go to the pub next door for an hour and a half, and then come back and just sit down as if they'd watched the whole film. And all used to be like, what's happened? And I'd have to tell him the whole thing of what happened, in case Jack went to him, what happened in the film, Aldo? So that was me. And that's what they were like. And it was just brilliant. Mm. It was just absolutely brilliant.
It certainly seems that way. Niall Quinn was in as well recently, and he was remembering, I think you were on this trip, Kev, you certainly were.
Yeah.
He was in with Jer and Kev a couple of weeks ago, and this trip to the States, to New York, came up.
Yeah.
On this one particular session that we were there, we were having a night out. Quinny was worse for wear. Quinny rarely ever gets worse for wear. But Gary, Quinny had these cowboy boots. Quinny used to have these. Quinny had these knee high cowboy boots. And the lads were slaughtering Quinny like snakeskin cowboy boots. Not Neil Young than anything else. Spoke about Neil Young before. Well. And Gary Kelly managed to take Quinny's boot off him. I don't know how he got it off you, in fairness. He's gone out into the street and he's threw it into the road. Now, we're talking, we were probably 6th Avenue. We were 2 or 3 down. It was chock-a-block the whole day. Thousands and thousands of cars going up this road. This was 3, 4 in the afternoon, wherever it was. Anyway, we were worse for wear. Quinny's walked around the whole day with one boot on, one boot off in this pub in the middle of Manhattan. And then we get out of the pub. Anyway, I think we get thrown out of the pub at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock that night. And Quinny's boot is still in the middle of the road.
I remember
Quinny
that.
Walks out into the middle of the road and just picks up this boot, puts the boot on casually, and just walks on to the next pub wherever we're going to that night. Nothing had happened.
You know, you're so right. I remember that. Niall Quinn comes out that story as such a hero.
Oh, has he ever told you this story? About when Mick tried to change it after Jack, he tried to change it and like, not so much go more professional, but try and keep us in a little bit, a little bit more. And so we've turned up for a game, and the windows, we had like the one floor at the airport hotel, so no one was allowed on it. We'd all be on the floor. Mm. Doors were always open, weren't they, Kev? We were in and out of each other's room. And we come in this one trip, Mick tried to change a few things, and they put locks on the window. Right, so we couldn't like, they call it go over the wall, but it used to be like through the window and like into a taxi and straight into town and then back in. We used to leave the windows open and sneak back in. So the next time we joined up, Kev brought a screwdriver, right, to take the locks off the window so we could get out.
Did you?
You know you did, because I caught you trying to undo the lock.
Yeah, I'm not going to kill his story here because it is Technically, what he's saying is true, but he's not. I didn't actually bring a screwdriver. It was a bottle opener. That's right, what it was.
He was using a bottle opener.
It was a bottle opener.
Like Bear Grylls.
And the bottle opener, worked to get the kid to unscrew. It was kind of like a little bolt that was in the window that stopped it opening more than maybe an inch. So if you unscrewed it at the bottom, got it all out together, you could open it then fully. Right. And anyway, so
you were the man.
I had a trick to if the lads wanted to leave, through my room,
So unbelievably childish.
Yeah.
When you think about it, grown adults.
It's brilliant, though, isn't it? Brilliant.
It's great.
Yeah.
Jack Charlton, 82 years old today.
Today, happy birthday, Jack.
I didn't
seen
know that.
That.
Yeah, just seen it there.
I asked you, in the queue today, and you couldn't remember, could you? Was it you asked? No, I'll tell you who it was. I asked Tony Hickey. I spoke to Tony Hickey this afternoon. I said, is it Jack's birthday today? And he went, I don't know. And I did. He's 82.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Chelsea are still 2-0 up on Middlesbrough, 58 minutes on the clock. We were just chatting there a couple of minutes ago during the break, and Kev ran just the 10K today in 41 minutes, which he wasn't that happy with. You know,
he's good. He's good.
Do better than that. Are you keeping fit? You look lean. You look like you're doing a bit.
Golf, walk, lots of walking. And I think being away in the hotels, you get bored a lot, don't you, Kev? So I do venture into the gym as much as
you were always one of the fitter players. You were always naturally very, very fit, weren't you? You know, in comparison with everyone, you were always probably the fittest at every club you were at, weren't you?
I could go in the gym now and do a 10K. No problem.
Right.
I wouldn't probably do it as quick as Kev. I'm about a 48, 49 if I want it. 40, I might do a 46 if I really go for it. Yeah. But I don't mind doing it. I find it boring, though. I just, I try and mix
you
it up.
You do that on the treadmill?
Yeah. And I'm a bit stiff around my legs, calves, ankles and stuff, next day. But, yeah, it's boring, isn't it?
I didn't realise you were the fittest generally at clubs you played for.
What are you trying to say, Joe? Let myself go.
With that shape, is that what you're saying?
I know,
Genetically gifted, so if you were, because you're going against pretty
well, I was rubbish at footy, wasn't I? I could just run all day.
Did you work hard on your fitness, or was it just a kind of genetic thing?
No.
Just, you just had it.
I was cross-country champion when I was younger, but I was from a really sporty family. My uncles were European boxing champions, middleweight boxing champions. So, sport, my sister played basketball for England. Mm. My mum was a hockey player for the county. My dad was really good non-league footballer.
Right.
Like I said, my uncles were professional boxers. So, really sporty, fit family, so I must have got the genes,
Right, wow. Mm. What was, were they measuring body fat percentages and stuff in your day when you first arrived? No. That's Neil Ruddock territory. That's not going to...
Yeah. Well, the first day I joined Liverpool, they were away in Russia.
Right.
And I had to wait 2 days for the first team to come back. And the day they come back, they done weights and body fat. And that was something we hadn't done at Bolton. And it was all new to me.
Yeah.
And
what age were you then? 20, 21?
20, no, I was 24, 20, going on 25. Okay. Yeah. But I remember going in, and it was a great opportunity because it's all done in the physio's room. It was a great opportunity, obviously, to meet the lads.
Mm.
And Roy Evans come in, and I remember him saying to Neil Ruddock, this is my first day, he said to Neil Ruddock, who was sitting on one of the treatment tables, and he said to Neil Ruddock, how's your weight? And Razor said, it's all right, Gaffer. He said, I'm about 13 stone. And Roy went, that's brilliant. And as he said that, the physio said, Mark Leather, he said, could you just get down off the treatment table, walk across the room and jump on the scales, Neil? So he jumps down off the treatment table, he walks right across the room, jumps on the scales. And Mark Leather says, Razor, you're 15 stone 9. And Roy Evans went, Jesus Christ, Razor, what have you eaten from there to there? And he went, what's the lightest you've ever been? And Neil Ruddock, you might find this hard to believe, Gaffer, but it was once 9 pounds, 6 ounces.
Hey.
No, but it was something that sort of crept in around the mid-90s, weights, body fats and all that kind of stuff, didn't it? But I was never one for worrying about that, really.
Right.
Were you, Kev? You were always skinny.
I was always okay. To be fair, it was all right.
Little sardine, weren't you? Racing sardine. No fat in a racing sardine job. You noticed that?
I have. There is another text in asking for you to give your thoughts on Liverpool this season.
I've got to be honest. I've done a lot of Liverpool working for their channel. I get to go to all the home games, done quite a few away games as well. I've really enjoyed this season. I think top four was obviously the aim. I felt a cup as well, but obviously Jürgen had different ideas of that, although he probably feels a little bit hard done by the semi-final League Cup to Southampton. You would have fancied us at that time. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be. But up until the new year, up until the Manchester City game, lots of goals, really expansive, brilliant. But really getting away with the way we were defending. We didn't defend great. It's been an Achilles heel all season, but we were scoring more than we were conceding. And I felt it was very similar to the way my team was around, 96. Like I said, we'd score lots of goals, but concede, but we'd get away with it. And there's only so far that will take you. You've got to have some nous at defending these days. And, it's no coincidence Liverpool have got the worst defensive record in the top seven. It has been their Achilles heel this season, and it did catch up with them
What do you think then about... I was at Anfield yesterday, so yesterday, poor again.
Thanks for ringing me. I was there.
Were you? Yeah. This always was down in the press room. You could have come down. I was busy. With Nathan yesterday. But was at the game, the Crystal Palace game a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Crystal Palace and yesterday against Southampton mirrored each other. They were very, very similar sort of games.
So exactly the same thing, Kev, yeah.
Exactly the same sort of games. I was at Swansea. I'm probably the jinx. I'm probably Liverpool's jinx this season. Every time I go and watch them at Anfield, they get beat or draw. Certainly don't win. But similar sort of games where they're not actually... You talked there about they've created tons of chances. The games that I've seen, they haven't. Creating absolutely nothing in these games.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in teams that have come to Anfield and done what Southampton did yesterday. They're kind of spoiling the Premier League for me. They're coming in...
You've done it in with the side yourself, and you're going against better teams. You go to a stadium and you go away from home to get a result. And Southampton and even the week Crystal Palace went to get a result, and it worked. So you can't criticise them, I don't think, for saying we're going to go and get a result.
Yeah, but there's a manner in which you do it. And where I felt... Puel was poor yesterday. He's had Redmond and Long on the bench, two players who are lightning. They can shift, the two boys, and yet he goes and plays Gabbiadini up front, who doesn't want to run the channels, who cannot be bothered running in behind, and basically was dropping into midfield and was no use nor ornament. And that's not his fault. He's told to do that. He come for a point with no inclination of trying to nick it. Sam. Yeah, he come for a point, but he had players on there you felt if they get the opportunity, they could just nick it, and they did. And they went behind, and they come back on 1-2-1. So fair play to Palace. But yesterday, I just thought Puel was so negative, it actually spoiled what could have been a decent game. Now, I understand managers, nowadays you have five or six bad results, you're out of a job. I understand you need to protect yourself, and in some ways it's going to Anfield, United, Arsenal, wherever, and getting a draw and shutting a shop. But surely you should have some ambition. And I felt if you'd have played Long or Redmond on their own up front, the ambition to maybe nick it in behind to a defence that isn't great this season, you just feel, that opportunity. And they might have scored, and it might have opened up the game a little bit more. I just thought they really come to spoil it.
But would you not be asking questions of Jurgen Klopp the way that he's setting his side? The only reason why I would say, because early on this season, they're creating lots of chances. Sides going up against them, brilliant. So good at getting in behind, as you said, creating bundles of chances. I was down at Palace this season, and they were brilliant. Unbelievable performance from them when I saw them play. Now, all of a sudden, I'm seeing a side that cannot change the way that they're playing. Origi up front. Origi's struggling badly. He wants to come towards the ball when he doesn't.
He's lost with Firmino and Coutinho.
Yeah,
he's lost.
He is. And there's got to come away. As soon as Sturridge came on yesterday, he brought a bit of spark. Now, I'm not saying Sturridge is the answer. I'm not saying whoever it would be, but he cannot change his certain style of play. He's got one way of playing, and that's it.
And the big disappointment for me yesterday, I like Jürgen. I think he's a perfect fit for Liverpool. I think he's bags of charisma. I think that he's a man manager. The players love him. I think at times, I think it's right to question him. Sometimes people are afraid to question him because he's so charismatic and, he is this figure and everything. And, I do think yesterday there was questions raised. And Kev will tell you, sometimes you play in these games where teams shut up shop. After 25 minutes, 30 minutes, it sets a script and it's very hard. They get very comfortable with the way they defend. They know how to do it. You have to change it. Now, Jürgen didn't change it for, a good 70 minutes yesterday. He didn't change the formation. He brought Lallana and Sturridge on with 20 minutes to go. You've got to ask the question, why? Why after 25 minutes, when you can't break them down, have you not done something? Why keep knocking on the door, knowing you're not gonna open it? You see Mourinho do it. He after half an hour, he's going to throw three players. We've seen him do it for Chelsea. Three players come on after half an hour. He's just changed it dramatically changed it.
It has been the case with too many Liverpool games that after 15, 20 minutes, the pattern is set.
Yeah.
And when that pattern is set, even the players get into the pattern. It's like a stalemate. And as you said, it takes a Sturridge type with his quick feet to come on and change things.
And the other thing is like, he picked the same team for the fourth consecutive game. Now, I get that. You know, no one's really done anything wrong. You can probably argue that complacency against Palace. They should have won it after going 1-0. He's given them all the opportunity. Now, they come and sat really deep, Southampton, yesterday. Origi, like you said, he's not the player to go towards the ball.
He looks lost, doesn't he?
There's nothing behind, no space behind. Mm. He doesn't know what to do. Mm. And Coutinho and Firmino, for as good as they are when they play together, Origi actually gets in the way when there's no space in behind because he's got nowhere to go. And he's looking at them thinking, oh, what are they going to do? Where should I go? Instead of concentrating on really what he should be doing. Mm. And I just feel like, I thought Jürgen should have seen that earlier yesterday. And I thought, you know, bring Sturridge on after 25 minutes.
What's the word on Sturridge? Is he just, is it gone? Like, physically?
He looked like he lost a lot of weight, Jason, yesterday.
Yeah, he looked lean yesterday. He looked lean and sharp yesterday. But, you know.
But physically,
you don't get enough out of Daniel. And unfortunately, you know, the way Jürgen Klopp wants to play, very much similar to Guardiola with Aguero, they just don't fit the mould, do they? You know, you're looking for something else.
Yeah.
So when you say you don't get enough, you mean physically closing down players' work rate?
Yeah.
Okay. Then the game where a lesser team sits back and it parked the bus, that would seem like you don't need Sturridge pressing and running around all day there. That's a perfect game for him.
Well, yeah. Well, after half an hour, I was screaming, bring him on. Hmm. Bring him on, because he looks sharp and he's got the ability to make something out of nothing.
And
is
the word that his body is right, that he's, or is there like are there worries over his future as a player?
I don't quite know with Daniel. Daniel's the only one who could tell you. I don't know whether Kev will say the same thing. I'm sure he will. I never played 100% fit, Joe. Never. I was always probably closest 95%. Mm. You know, I was always carrying maybe the niggle and adrenaline would just get you through it because you wouldn't feel it after it kicked in. Yeah. But I just feel Daniel's one of these where if he's not quite right, it just doesn't work for him.
Klopp's alluded to that as well. Mm. He's basically, you know, he kind of said it's in the guy's head a little bit, I think. He's going to have to, I think, play through the pain barrier a bit more.
He did say that last year, didn't he? He did say that, yeah. Mm.
But I'm a fan of Daniel.
I think he's a brilliant player.
Yeah, so do I.
And do you know what, Kev? Like I do quite a lot with the club, and I maybe go away with them and do various different things with them. And if he's around, he always comes over and says hello.
Right,
always comes over. How are you? What you up to? How are you doing?
Yeah,
like he's always got time for you.
Wouldn't be the norm necessarily.
No, a lot of them will walk past you. A lot of them don't even recognise you.
Sure,
yeah, which is quite sad. But
he's a good fella.
Him, Jordan Henderson, Adam Lallana. They'll always come over, ask how you are, you know, how things are. They've seen any of the lads and stuff.
Right.
And I like that because I think there should be that respect I was always like that with the older players, you know, with the respect and stuff, because we've all been through the same thing. We all know what it's like.
Mm. Well, they'll be the old guy at the airport. Not that you're the old guy at the airport. The older, they'll be the older retired guy at the airport with a new batch before they even know it.
Yeah, one day, yeah. You've forgotten man very quickly, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take a short break. Chelsea have gone 3-0 up, by the way. Matic, with his goal-scoring form of late, continuing. So, 70 minutes in the clock. Chelsea 3-0 up. Short break. We're back with Kevin Jason.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sports.
Hey, welcome back. Chelsea 3-0 up on Middlesbrough. 73 minutes in the clock. They're cruising.
It's a league done, isn't it? League done and dusted.
Yeah.
What's that now? Obviously, the game has 7 points, isn't it? One win Friday. They play Watford, is it Friday, I think? Whether Friday night they're playing game, league done and dusted. I think that'll be it.
Sad though, Kev. Two North East teams gone down.
Yeah.
I know Newcastle coming back, but it means nothing really in the sense of the North, because they don't get that derby, do they?
Yeah. Do you know what the big one that's coming about now, though, Jason? That big North-South divide in England. A lot of the foreign players now coming over. The lure of Liverpool, perhaps, and maybe the Man United, maybe the bigger clubs around the North West. City, of course, but the foreign players want to go to London. They want to go and play in London now. Arsenal, Chelsea, even West Ham now. West Ham, you might see them becoming a force. It's starting to take effect, that.
There's increasingly murmurings of Sunderland training ground around London.
Yeah, that was said a while ago, wasn't it? Yeah.
Which would be a sad day for the North East if the training ground had to be in London to attract players.
Yeah,
I think that's been around a while. I remember Roy Evans saying, you know, he spoke to certain players and they fancied London, the bright lights of London and stuff. And, you know, the North, I think it's been there for a while. Mm. I don't think it's just creeping in. I think it's been there, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a brave club that does it first, whoever does it first. Because it won't go down well with the fans. No, could you imagine telling Sunderland fans?
PR thing, yeah. No chance.
You wrote, there was a brilliant piece that you had in The Telegraph last week, which got a lot of attention over
There's
here.
Two words that don't usually go together. Brilliant and McAteer.
McAteer and The Telegraph.
McAteer, brilliant. They never go together.
Brilliant, McAteer, Telegraph. I stand by it. All in the last week. It was on the back of Aaron Lennon's situation. You didn't really talk too much about Lennon's, what's going on there.
I actually did in the interview.
Oh, did you?
I spoke a lot, yeah, about it, yeah. But okay. Unfortunately, he decided to take it in a different direction.
Right. He went down more about your own personal experience.
He did, yeah. Piece.
Okay, right.
Well, obviously, it was, you know, I can relate to Aaron Lennon and possibly what he's going through. I think, you know, depression's a terrible thing. You know, you walk around with a plaster cast, even tonight, you look at John Muldoon, he's got a black eye. We asked him about it, you know what I mean? And he tells you about it and stuff, but you break your arm, break your leg, you walk around the cast and people want to know and they give you sympathy and, you know, they give you the support. And, you can be depressed and nobody know, and it can just eat away at you to the point where, well, you know, to the point where people are committing suicide. And, you know, it's only, I feel like the real people who are heavily depressed are the lucky ones that get away with it and get help in the time that they've got. But, you know, we've seen some terrible outcomes and yeah, I can relate to it because it happened to me. You know, you just don't realise, Joe. It just creeps up on you. You start doing things out of character.
What was your experience, just to give the context? Did you suffer it throughout your playing career, or was it just after? Or when did you first think, I do suffer with this?
No, I think while I was playing, I was always all right in the sense of I had strong teammates around me. Even when I wasn't playing well, you know, the teammates would drag you through it, coming away with Ireland, having a laugh, and then all of a sudden your form picks up and you're always okay. But
right. Like
for me, it was just coming towards the end of playing. I knew it was kind of, my days were numbered. I was in the gym a lot. I was always wondering what I was going to do after football. My private life had, I'd gone downhill. I'd split up with my partner, who I had a child, Harry, my eldest. And we'd split up. So I wasn't seeing Harry. I wasn't waking up in the house and Harry was there. They'd moved into another house. My career was sort of on a downward spiral. I wasn't getting on with the manager at Tranmere at the time, who basically shut the book on my career and it had finished. And do you know what, Joe? I was always all right with the lads. I'd be with Kev. I was always, like, Kev would never be able to tell. You go for a pint or you go out, and I was always, like, still the character, the funny one, telling jokes as soon as I got behind closed doors.
Really? Because it's just, you know, it was in your book last year, and I think a lot of people saw your interview in the Late Late Show.
Yeah.
And I remember when that happened, saying to Kev, did you have any idea? And he said, no, honestly, no idea. And most people who would listen to the last 45 minutes of you chatting away, laugh stories, would think, and I hate saying this because it's such a stupid thing to say, but they would think you're one of the last candidates for something like depression, because it doesn't work like that, clearly. So
no. It's got no preference, depression. It doesn't matter who picks them.
You're saying you get home, close the door, and you start ruminating on things, thinking about things, gets on top of you.
Just spirals out of control. And I found I didn't have the answers.
Right.
I always kind of said it was like being like dropped in the middle of a woods and someone saying, right, you've got to get out. And it's like, you think you're getting out and there's another tree there and you think, oh, well, it's just this way. And then there's another tree and you just think, whoa. And you just cannot get out of this forest. And it's just endless. And like I said, you start doing things out of character. I kept getting baths all the time. I was in the bath about seven. I was the cleanest kid in town. I was just in the bath all the time. Like, I'd wake up, I think, right, I get a bath. So I get a bath, kill half an hour. And then I get up and then I get my breakfast. And then, like, it gets about like 11 o'clock, half 11. I think, oh, I'll just get another bath. Jump in the bath again. And like, I get like four or five baths a day. It was just weird. And then the turning point.
When you're into your third bath today, sitting there in the bath.
Yeah.
On some level, I presume you're thinking, well, this is a bit unusual, but...
No. All right. You just think that's the norm.
Right.
You don't question it. You just think, I'll just get another bath. It's like, it's the norm. Just lie in the bath and just look out the window.
Right.
And then, like, think, and then you just think of something else, and then you get out the bath, and then you go and do something else in the house.
Yeah.
And then it gets to, like, 5 o'clock. You think, I'll have a bath before I go to bed. And then you get in the bath again.
Yeah.
And I just found myself doing that all the time. It's only, like, when you sort of come out of it and you analyse what you were doing and you think, oh my God. But at the time, you don't think that's anything wrong with that.
How did you get help? Did you get help?
Yeah, I got I started missing Harry more and more because I had more time on my hands and stuff. And
is this Bath period, obviously, is you've retired and you're in this.
Yeah.
That's when you get into that pattern. Right?
Yeah, this is like months. This is going on.
Oh, really?
Months after I'd finished, into months after I'd finished.
Okay.
And I was driving over to pick Harry up from school and I was just thinking, like, I've got no job. Like, footy's just not there anymore. I've got no contract. And, like, because that's like a light switch. One day you are in work and the next day you're not in work.
Mm.
And all them mates that you had yesterday, they're on the training pitch and you're not with them.
And were you keeping in touch with many guys or does that just kind of stop? Is that the way football goes?
Yeah, a lot. It does, Kev, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I am lucky because I would say I've got a lot of friends that I know I could ring Kev up after not speaking to him for 6 months. We don't go 6 months without speaking, but I know I could ring him up 6 months and we would speak like we spoke yesterday.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of friends like that, really.
They wouldn't be saying, why are you calling me?
No,
yeah, no. Just pick up, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it was. And then...
But in that period, you lose a lot of friends still.
You don't want to pick the phone up and, people would ring you and you think, oh, I'll call them back later. And you just never do.
Mm.
And then you think, you don't deal with anything. You just don't deal with anything. Like, a letter coming to pay a bill, oh, I'll sort that out later.
Mm.
You just stop really functioning. It's like, it's really weird, Joe. It's like the strangest thing.
Is it because it feels like too much effort to have to deal with all this stuff? Or
just can't be bothered.
Right.
And then...
So you're driving to pick up Harry from school, you were saying?
Yeah, and I was at a... You know, you wake up in the morning and already you're telling yourself it's a horrible day. So, you know, then road rage is like, just like, that was, I've still got a bit of that, to be honest. But that maximum road rage is like the worst thing. And then I remember just being in the tunnel and just thinking, the Mersey Tunnel, and just thinking, if I actually just swing this car across these lanes here, like, you know, that's it. It's done. There is no more worrying about anything. And then all of a sudden you start processing, but, you know, who's going to tell Harry that there's been an accident and his dad's passed away? Or, you know, I might actually hit someone who's got a couple of kids. And I don't know. And you just, so I was processing things like that enough to not do it.
Mm.
And then I was driving, so I had Harry and everything was all right, bit of a blur. And then I was driving back and I was just, I used to get anxious as well. And I went to see my mum and for some reason, like, it was out the door. I wouldn't usually have gone to see my mum because I drop him off at, like, say, 7 o'clock and then I drive back. It gets 7:45 by the time. And my mum was, she lives around the corner from me. And for some reason, I stopped off at my mum's and she opened the front door. And I remember it now and I just, like, burst out crying. And, like, she knew I was struggling and she got me in. And she worked in an industry that that had counsellors working in that industry. She worked for the drug service. And she just said, I'm going to sort you out, you need help. And I was like, no, I'll be all right. And she went, no. And she physically, I stayed at my mum's that night and she drove me the next morning to see a counsellor that she knew. And I literally walked into the woman's house, Jane her name was, and I walked into her house and I sat down for about 2.5 hours and poured a lot out. And then we went through a process of every night for a couple of weeks. And then it gradually gets less and less as you get stronger and stronger. But counsellors don't tell you what to do.
Mm.
They just give you advice on how to not think about the negative things and how to deal with things. They don't give you the answers. You have to figure that out yourself.
Mm.
A diary was a big thing that I needed to do and get me working. So she'd say, anyone that rings you up, if News Talk ring you up, you take the job. So, like, you ring me and
so
go,
that's why a couple of years ago, Joel, when you were picking up the phone to you were saying yes.
This McAteer lad's really keen.
Oh, he just wants to do everything.
Yeah.
And,
so that was one of the pieces of advice.
Yeah. Right. And I got into golf, and I found that golf, for 4 hours of the day, or for as long as I was on the golf course or practicing, I was not thinking about not seeing Harry, not playing football, not what's, you know, in 3 months' time, what am I going to be doing, or money, or like this or that or this. And I'd be focusing on golf, and that's why I'm like, I love golf so much. I owe golf a lot.
Right.
And I gradually worked my way out of it, and then you get strong enough to go out and venture out, and then I met Lucy and married her and got two beautiful boys, and Harry's 17 now, and life's brilliant. And I picked the phone up now, and it's brilliant.
That's great.
Loving life.
So that whole counselling experience seems like it was incredibly positive for you.
Amazing as well, you know, counselling.
And were you, like, I can relate to what you're saying, but I can't. Obviously, I never kind of battled something on those kind of levels, and I've never sat down in front of a counsellor, a complete stranger, and had to pour myself out. Was that a difficult thing to do, or were you so...
Was at the beginning.
Right. That first day, because, you know, you're yeah. saying, your mum suggested, and you said, oh, no. Like, and then you said you poured your heart out to her.
Yeah, if you want...
The next day.
You've got to... It's difficult to obviously, to a stranger. It's difficult to sort of, like you say, tell them, like, you it's like opening boxes.
Darkest, yeah.
It's like boxes in your head. You've got to open them and get it out. And it's some of them boxes in there that, you know, you feel you can never open, but, you know, they get it out of you, and then you do feel like it's like a weight off your shoulders. Mm. And, you know, she was listening, and then she gives you things to read, and then you know, and the way they talk to you, and they go right back to your childhood. I mean, there's all different ideas on therapy now, and, you know, there's all different techniques and whatever, but, you know, she went back to my childhood, and I grew up as a kid in a household, I know I alluded to before, the boxers and stuff. So my dad was a very demanding father for success, to be a winner. It was always win at all costs. Mm-hmm. So I was forever trying to, you know, impress my parents, or certainly my dad. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to win because I wanted his approval.
Yeah.
So there was that, you see, and then
approval is tied up with achievement.
Yeah, and then gradually that goes on into later life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is a reason why you always want to, you know, be liked, maybe, or, you know, and you've got to sometimes.
Do you think? Do you think sport in general, football, like, you know, obviously in our terms, football, sport in general, is tackling it in the right manner? We had Gordon Taylor on the show last week. Gordon Taylor spoke about the work that they're doing within the PFA. Various studies have suggested 1 in 4 footballers across that study are suffering with various forms of depression. 25%, this is huge, 26%, I think, actually. 26% of footballers across the board are suffering with various forms of depression. So are we doing enough? And then we're talking about various sports here as well. Are we doing enough, do you feel?
I think the problem with it, Kev, is we're in an industry where you can't really show weakness. You don't want to be dropped. You know, you don't want to give the manager an excuse to drop you. You don't want your teammates feeling that you're not giving 100%. You're a weak link.
Mm. I would think a lot of players who worry about it, say someone comes out publicly while playing, I would think they would worry that a manager who might be thinking about signing them would be thinking, well, what about the real pressure part of the season?
And I can tell you what, Joe, I would probably say that manager would probably be put off by it. I would probably say that.
I totally agree.
Yeah. I think that's the truth.
So there is a stigma inside of football, I would suggest, where players don't want to admit it. Mm. And I get that. And I think, you know, whether that can be addressed, I think that's a long time coming, because, well,
these things take time. And has it been have you found it to be a positive experience to write about it in the book, to do interviews here and there about it?
Yeah, I'm totally. Yeah, I was made up. I sat down when I was writing the book and thought, should I put it in? You know, because at the end of the day, I've got Harry, who was very impressionable at 15 when I was doing the book. You know, he'd come out when he was 16, so he would have understood, and I had to think to myself, does he want to know what was going on back then? But he's very level-headed. And I think, you know, if my story can help one person, then it's worth it. And I just thought, yeah, you know, I wanted the book to be very truthful. I wanted it to be honest. And I wanted it to help people who were in that situation. So I thought, yeah, and I'm very open now to talk about it. I'm not embarrassed by it. I probably went to, and the mad thing is, I probably stayed in therapy maybe a few months too long, because I actually loved it. I actually loved it in the end.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really interesting. I got really interested in it in the end. And the brain is such a powerful instrument. It's frightening where it can send you. It's ridiculous.
You talk about the worries that you'd have. So you retire. So, okay, you mentioned your childhood stuff, and, you know, sport is how you win approval your whole life, and you're on a pedestal. So, boom, that's gone. And then it's, well, how am I going to provide for family, not seeing Harry, money, and just, when you say you were anxious, man, I can see if you're worrying about that over and over and over and over and over and over again, and you've no control over how you're thinking, then it can only lead to bad things.
And the other thing as well, Joe, as a footballer, you don't need for anything, and you are told you are the best all the time.
Yeah.
And you've got the adulation from the fans, you know, autographs, photographs, your ego's always getting massaged. You know, the coaches and the managers are telling you you're the best thing since sliced bread, because that's how they get you to perform. You know, it's very difficult to handle defeat. You know, we are top sportsmen at the top of our game, you know, who are win at all costs, aren't we? Mm. We train for it. We mentally train for it. And all of a sudden, Joe, The next day, it's like a light switch. I mentioned it before. It's gone. It's gone. And there is no better feeling. I've never taken drugs in my life. I've taken nothing in my life. I've no idea what it feels like to do anything right. But I tell you now, if you score at Anfield, Cop End, or the Holland goal, for instance, the rush that you get, nothing replicates that. No. Nothing.
That has to be better than any drug.
We've had me in studio and not even spoke about the Holland goal as well.
I was waiting
now
for him to bring it up. Yeah, it's worked in nicely.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, to go into a dressing room and look around at your squad of players and your teammates who have given everything. You know, going back to the Holland game, we were all hugging each other. We'd achieved monumental status that game. And everyone, I get the pat on the back and scored the goal, but everybody played their part that day. And you look around and you just think, there is nothing like that.
No.
And, you know, that goes. It's gone. It's absolutely, and you will never get that back. We played Real Madrid in Madrid 2.5 years ago. We played the other game. We hosted them at Anfield about a month ago.
Yeah.
And we played Real Madrid away. And 70,000 people turned up. Zidane played, Carlos and all that. And I played in the game for Liverpool. And I'd done an interview after the game, and Claire from Liverpool TV, she asked me how it was, and I started crying.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I was crying, and I was like, oh, Claire, I can't tell you what that was like. It was like I was a footy player again. It was the best thing in my life.
Wow.
And it was like, I actually, like, you go to the game on the bus, you'd have your pre-match meal, the dressing room set up the same, you warm up, you go out, 70,000 people, you come in, and it was like, I miss it so much.
Sure, yeah.
I miss it so much.
I mean, it's just the reality. Like, there's no point saying you don't, because how could you not miss that? You know, it's just a fact.
But you go into therapy and it teaches you to deal with that. That's what they teach you, to deal with it. And when them dark days and thoughts come, then you switch off and you think about something else. You think of all the good things in your life and what's going on. And life's got, I'm in a good place at the minute, Joel. Brilliant.
Good. Well, thanks so much for talking about all that, because I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good.
Barrel of laughs.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. It's Mental Awareness Week as well. And, you know, I think it's Aaron Lennon. You know, I'm so glad it's come to this, because he will get help now. Mm. You know, you don't want it not to have been found, because you know.
That's like the thing. It's about how he's suffering in silence and what he's been through to get to the stage he's at right now. So, as you said, hopefully he's got the right people around him now. That's the best thing for him.
Yeah. We'll take a short break and we'll get final thoughts from Kev and Jason in a moment.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
You're welcome back. Has that gone full time? Or Matic is waving. He's either been substituted and it's gone full time. Either way.
No, it's done and dusted yet. 3-0.
Okay. 3-0 Chelsea.
Comfortable.
We'll bring you the full-time report from Nigel in a couple of minutes.
Has JT come on as a sub there, or he hasn't and he's taking his trackie off again? What's the story there?
Can we get word? Is JT a substitute who's on the pitch, or has he just done a Champions League again? They're checking outside.
No, he's on. He did come on for the last minute.
Tracksuit bottoms on or off?
Got a few tweets as well, Joe, coming in. Tom Dunn's actually tweeting as well. Great interview with Jason. Brave interview with Jason McAteer tonight, with his battle with overcoming depression. That's from Damien Eagers. Plenty of love for Jason tonight.
Yeah, Jason, hero of mine for USA 94 and Japan 02 and scoring against Holland. Listen to him now, talks openly in a way that's bound to help other people. He's even more a hero of mine now. That's Pat in Dublin. Lads, classic radio from Jason, a super guest, some great stories told, but more than anything, I feel a lot of people will find solace in his honest account of his struggle with depression, column in Dublin 3. Lots of love coming in for you. And nice, I mean, it was kind of impromptu. I mean, we didn't plan to.
I wasn't planning to be here.
No,
it's my love for Kev and you, Joe. And you, I wanted to make it up with you again, Joe.
Well, listen, we're back. Let's I'm going to be calling you again all the time.
Let's make kiss and make up and put it all behind us.
The soonest thing is the one that's really blown me away. Yeah. It's the beautiful story from this evening. USA 94 comes up there, and Japan and Korea 02 comes up there. I presume, just because of how much your age and the injury in 02, I presume it's USA 94 is your favourite World Cup of those two?
Massively different.
Yeah.
Massive. I went as a senior pro 2002. I went as a young, wide-eyed fan, as it were, in 94. Yeah, and obviously events completely overshadowed 2002. The injury, Roy going home, the stress.
What happened there?
The captain went home, you know, the stress Mick was under and the lads were under.
I always say the one thing that reminds me of that day, though, I'll just say this quickly.
Which day?
The day that when Roy walked out. Oh, yeah, Jason, yeah. Lee Carsley, me, I think Clinton as well, certainly us three, went to watch Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man. It had come out, obviously, in America, so the three of us went to watch Spider-Man.
Not to tell anyone
went
that.
To watch Spider-Man that day, and then it all went off that night, yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, rubbish film.
Yeah.
It is terrible.
The original Spider-Man, that was Tobey Maguire's first one, yeah, so it's that long ago, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, 94 was, oh, it was a mess, and I didn't really go there with any ideas of playing. So, you know...
No pressure, then.
Well, I think it was number 21, I think. I mean, you do the math, Joe. It's only 16. Mm. Like, first 11, then it's five subs.
Yeah.
I'm number 20, 21, thinking, no chance. And then Jack turns round. That always sticks in my mind, you know. It was about 100-odd degrees, giant
for the
stadium.
Italy game.
For the Italy game. Yeah. And it was over 100 degrees, Kev, right? And Jack turns round to me and goes, tells me to warm up. I'm thinking, I can't get me off the jam.
I'm ready.
And next thing, he throws me on. And so I get on the pitch with Brazy. And like it was like, remember Gazzetta Football?
Yeah.
I used to watch that every Saturday. Yeah. So it was like all of a sudden, I'm like standing next to Maldini. It was good luck at Maldini. Oh, like $1 million.
Who are you telling?
Oh,
who are you telling?
Yo.
Kev won't admit that.
No, I never said
what?
That. But the thing is, Jace, right?
He's a beautiful
man.
The
lads are on at me, right? They're saying, like, who's the best-looking player that you played alongside or saw? And I said, I never used to think like that. I never thought like that.
I didn't think, no.
I swear to God, I didn't.
Patrick Berger, beautiful specimen.
Really?
Berger, even now. Now. I work with Paddy a lot. Oh, stunning specimen. Yeah, Maldini.
Yeah, Maldini.
No, great looking. Threat. Absolute
threat. There you go.
Threat. He is.
Oh, it's come full circle. There's too many in-jokes. If you didn't hear last week's show, Kev is one of these few people who doesn't seem to have eyes, so he can't see that Maldini is gorgeous.
Yeah.
But he did say the one thing in a team, if a good-looking lad arrived in, the other lads would look at him and go, he's a threat.
That was the line, wasn't it? Threat. Yeah. But obviously...
Maldini in person is every bit as good-looking as you know.
$1 million, yeah.
It's the eyes.
They look like films. For some reason, they look like film stars, don't they? Like, in a bin bag, they look like film stars. So,
you had a good game. Did you give Maldini a bit of trouble down the road?
I nutmegged Baggio, didn't I? And then, I caused a bit of havoc.
I think you did, yeah.
Yeah.
You were like a ball of energy.
I always remember the Mexico one sticks in my mind when you set up John Aldridge
Buffet
for the goal.
Ball.
Yeah, brilliant. Just like, it reminded me of the cross you did against Holland.
Holland for Robbie.
Yeah, similar sort of ball. Get to the byline, cut it back, great ball in, yeah.
So there was that, and then it obviously gets my start against Norway with the infamous Roef, that joke. And then obviously the Holland game, I'd got ahead of myself, thought I was going to start. So I was really gutted when I never had no right to be gutted. And then I come on, but we were 2-0 down and there's too much to do.
Yeah.
But whole 6 weeks, Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like being on a stag with your mates.
Yeah.
I'm playing 4 games of footy and going to see Mickey Mouse. It was just Gary Kelly, Phil Babb. Wow, it was just brilliant. If you could say to me you can do 6 weeks of your life again, I'd do that.
Right.
No.
And is 0-2 because of your injury and because of the Roy stuff, is it just stressful or does a sweet spot come for you?
It was stressful.
Yeah.
The injury, yeah. You don't feel, I didn't feel I was too much a part of it.
Yeah.
And it hurt as well because I played a big part in the qualifiers. And I tell you the feeling I always had, Kev, I ran away when we qualified.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just a relief and it was just more tears, wasn't it? Immense.
It was a great night, that. It was. Jason won the penalty in the first game and I'd been injured actually prior to that, and I think they said Mick played me. I'd been out for Sunderland for quite a while, played in the two games, didn't play, did okay, weren't great, wasn't great across the two games myself. And we got there, it was just... You know, because we beat Holland, it was almost like we qualified then.
Yeah.
Then we obviously had the Cyprus game, I think it was after that in Dublin, to finish off the campaign. And that was low key. And we had to build ourselves up then for the Iran game.
Yeah.
And then it was that relief after it, wasn't it? And
that was amazing.
It was. Yeah. It was just an amazing feeling.
Great party on the plane on the way back.
Just couldn't have alcohol there, so you had to wait for the plane to go off the
plane. The pilot came on, he went, we can't celebrate until we're out of Iranian airspace. As soon as we got out of Iranian, it was, champagne corks popping. But yeah, and it kind of, the injury and the Roy situation, You know, and I look back at it and think, I just wish it hadn't have happened with Roy. He was so good around that time.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted him to be part of it. And my big thing with Roy is not his arguments. It was the timing of when he did it. Mm. It's like, why didn't you just wait until we got home? shut up and not shut up as in like keep your mouth, but just forget about it. Yeah. And then let's do it when we get back. But he was so passionate about what he believed in that he decided to make the call. And it did. And the world media descended on us, didn't they, Kev? We couldn't come out of the hotel. You know, when 94, we were like...
Do what you want.
Do what we wanted.
We should have been here during that period in 02. My God.
Well, that was the worst thing about it. We wanted to be here watching what we were doing. We used to get sent videos back then.
Yeah. Someone's texting, that's the campaign as well where you score that great goal away to Holland.
Holland away,
yeah, the left footer, the curler,
yeah, the bender, yeah,
that's the one that features in your head and in the Head and Shoulders ad, is it?
No, the
Carlsberg ad where you win the World Cup.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
I remember that ad. Yeah.
Brilliant, my name. I loved all that.
I should finally mention, by the way, we asked you what did Johnny Sexton study in UCD. It was commerce. So congratulations to Anne Byrne, you and a mate are coming along to our Rugby Roadshow at the Mansion House Thursday. We've Johnny Sexton, Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood, Dunico Callan all there.
Wow.
Yeah, it'll be good. And we'll give away more tickets to tomorrow night's show. The Off the Ball Roadshow in association with HeinekenRugbyClub.com, helping rugby fans get more out of the game. So Chelsea have won 3-0. We're pretty much out of time. From, frankly, Graeme Souness's ball bag to... depression and your time with Ireland and everything in between. It's been great.
It's been emotional.
No, thanks so much for coming in.
I'm glad we've patched it up.
We're gonna be calling you all the time.
I love you.
Jason McAteer, we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Kev.
Cheers.
Give my ball any yard of grass. I'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give my ball any yard of spice. He'll give you a move with your flaker eyes. Ra-ta-ta-ta!